Please put your hands together and welcome to the stage right now, Jonah Carey, as well as Tim Raines, everybody.
Oh, wait a minute. I know what's going to happen here. Jonah, like, anyone who knows you knows the love affair that you have with Tim Raines. Do you have, like, a really exciting introduction plan for him?
Is this on?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yes, it is. So, did I ruin it for you, Jonah? I'm sorry.
I don't really know that fellow. Somebody, Tom Paines, he's like a hockey player or something. I don't really, can you brief me on?
Did they have baseball in like Montreal or something?
I don't know anything. So I will say one thing. We went 2 weeks ago. Yeah. Let me see a context. So every Hall of Famer-to-be gets a private tour of the Hall of Fame.
Right.
With their family. So it's like wife, not usually kids, but he's got young, beautiful six-year-old daughters. And they're allowed to invite two journalists. So they invited Bob Elliott, who's the legend of all legends.
Oh, okay.
And they invited me. Now, I never covered Tim Raines because I was too young.
Right.
I rooted for him when I was like seven. And somehow I got looped into this thing. And it was awesome. And so I wrote a whole piece about it. It's going to be tomorrow at CBS Sports. And I'm journalism school, all that stuff. And sometimes once in a while, you get sucked into this thing where you have to cheer in the press box. You're not supposed to, but you do.
Oh, anyone who's been in the press, like, come on.
Well, but
I've been there, I've done that.
Of course, but in this case, it's like, I'm in the story a little bit, and it makes me, like, super uncomfortable, but I kind of have to be. So it's very, you know, I didn't steal 808 bases, I didn't do any of that stuff, but I'm so happy for the guy, and he's, like, such a good person, which is amazing, that when you meet somebody that you root for as a small child, and they're more wonderful than you can imagine, who gives a crap about the stolen bases? Like, he's a great guy, and I could not be happier for all his success and for honor that he got.
Very cool. Well, I will say this. I didn't get the chance, obviously, to take that incredible tour with Tim Raines, but I'm going to get off the stage and leave you with this. I did once get to share the field with Tim Raines. I played in a charity softball tournament. Ken Reed decided to recruit some of us to play with him. Now, Ken might not be as big of a Tim Raines supporter as Jonah is, although
close.
I think, like, they're pretty close. Like, Ken is borderline obsessed, okay? So when we had draft night, the first name that Ken Reed called was Tim Raines! You couldn't even understand what he was saying when we finally got to play. Tim Raines! But that was how much Tim meant to Ken, and it was pretty cool that we got to be coached by Tim. We got to take some photos and everything else. So I'm really excited that he's here. So let's not really make him wait any longer, okay?
He's hiding behind the painting.
Can we call him the original bringer of rain? Maybe? No? I don't know. Either way, ladies and gentlemen, the Hall of Famer, Tim Raines!
Hall of Famer. I just want to say on this.
Rock it out, Tim. Rock it out. Have fun.
Hello, everybody.
You're the Hall of Damn Fame. How's that feel?
He's my hero.
Come on. I feel like we've done this once or twice or 82 times. Let's start with the present. We can go back to other stuff after. Really and truly, we just did this tour. I just mentioned it before. You got to bring Ava and Amelie and Shannon and Randy and such cool stuff like Babe Ruth's bat and all kinds of neat junk. It was so awesome. What was that like for you to get that experience where not only are they showing you the Jackie and Aaron and Ruth and all that stuff, but here's your 500th base. Here's the cleats that you wore literally with gum on the bottom when you broke the AL record for consecutive steals. It was awesome.
I tell you what, I felt like a little kid again.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm way too old to be saying I'm a kid. But, you know, you think about those things. You know, when I was a kid, I used to watch, I watched television. It was black and white, but I enjoyed watching baseball. You know, my heroes were Aaron and Mays, you know, and guys like that, Willie McCovey, those kind of guys. I wasn't that big a stature, you know, guys that hit a lot of home runs, but When I was in Little League, I did. But what happened when I got to high school, everybody passed me by. So, I wasn't a home run hitter, so I had to try to do something else, and that was to utilize my speed. And, back in those days, Lou Brock was the guy. But no one really talked about him that much. I mean, even though he was a great player, he's a Hall of Famer, I'm not saying that, but he didn't get the notoriety as the guys that hit home runs. So I didn't look at baseball as a way to, steal bases and make a name for myself. I mean, I looked at baseball as a way that to try to utilize everything I had, stealing bases, driving runs in, playing defense, all of those things. But, when I first started, it was about the stolen base. So it took me a while to get away from that. And I think the more you looked at my career, you could see that it was a lot more than just stealing 800 bases. There was a lot of other things that I could do.
You reach base 3,977 times. Not that anybody's counting. That's more times than Lou Brock, Tony Gwynn, Herman Killebrew, Eddie Matthews.
That's another thing. Roberto Alomar. I have no idea. I mean, he freaks me out with all these numbers.
If you've seen the movie Rain Man, you're familiar with my character.
That's right. I tell you, when I first met this guy, we're in Montreal, and he was announcing me at a charity dinner, and he came up with some stats. I mean, he knew more about what I did on the field than I knew myself, and I'm like, is he talking about me? He must be talking about someone else. I don't remember doing all that stuff. But
it wasn't Cromartie. It was
no,
you.
It definitely wasn't Cromartie, but you know what? I owe a lot to this guy. I mean, he's the guy I feel like that kind of got me over the hump. I think, the numbers that I put up, I didn't really realize. And he made everyone realize the things that I did. And I think with his help and with a lot of other writers starting to see the stuff that I did on the field, actually gave me that boost to get over the hump. And not to just get over the hump. I mean, I finished with 86%, which is a pretty big number, And I want to thank this guy in front of all of you for the help that he gave me.
The thing is, we're 3 months away from your induction in Cooperstown, and I'm going to cry every second of that whole weekend. So at least now I'm preparing by crying in front of an audience full of hundreds of people. It's good. I like that you're doing that. There's a million ways that we can go. Let me ask you about that team breaking in the early 80s. I think that's a good way to go about it, is that one and the Yankees one. And especially Hawk. We got to share a stage. Feels like it's happened a few times. We did one in Kansas City last summer.
Yes.
At the Negro Leagues Museum, which, by the way, is such a cool place. If you get a chance to visit, please do. And it's like fire and ice with you and him on stage, man. He's just like funny, like a great sense of humor, but dry, like desert dry. And the two of you play off each other, and it's great. And you could tell sometimes you meet somebody and they're with their friend, and it's like, oh, yeah, these guys have been friends since for whatever, 20 years, right. 30 years. You could tell. You come into that clubhouse, now then, you're a joker, you're easygoing, whatever. He's Mr. Serious. He's got muscles coming out of his eyeballs. He's, a bit committed to his craft, all this stuff, doesn't drink.
Right.
How does one foster a close relationship when it's just so far apart in some ways in personality?
Well, because I felt like someone needed to talk to him. Because everybody was afraid. Everybody was afraid of Andre. I mean, and he had that stare that it was natural. I mean, I don't think he tried to do it on purpose. But, if you didn't know him and you just watch his natural stare, you would be like, I'm not saying anything to that guy. he'll knock my head off. But that was the way it was when I first met him. My first couple of years, I was a 19-year-old kid. being called up from AA, and I get to Montreal, and I actually get a chance to see Andre up close and personal. And I didn't really know anything about him other than him being Rookie of the Year, being a great player. He's from Florida, from Miami, which I'm a Florida boy, so I kind of felt like we had that connection some kind of way. But when he looked at me, I was like, oh, my God. I don't know if I can say anything to this guy. And it took two more years, really, for me to kind of get that feeling that I can actually go up and say something to him. But, you know, back in the day, I don't know if you guys realize this, because nowadays players, it's not the same. I mean, back in the day, when you were a rookie, you didn't speak unless you were spoken to. So, and it's not as bad as you think, but, I mean, it's just that was the kind of respect that the veteran players had, especially from rookies or two- or three-year players. You had to kind of earn your respect. You had to earn. I mean, we had this big boom box. We don't have boom boxes anymore. You know, you have headphones, but we had this big boom box that I had to carry around on every road trip. This boom box was as big as I was, so it's like you see the box before you saw me. And I did not say anything. I just made sure I got the boombox on the plane, off the plane, on the bus, off the bus. And
who was hazing you more than anybody with the boombox on? Who was like the chief offender? I was going to guess Cromartie.
Cromartie, for sure. Yeah. He's tried to haze me now, but he can't, he can't anymore. But I mean, back in those days, I mean, and you know, but players today is a little different, you know. I just don't see the respect for the veteran players anymore. And I understand. I remember when I was a veteran and a lot of young guys were coming up, I didn't feel like I had to haze them at all. Because for me, I felt like you're just as important of a player for the team as everyone else. And I wanted guys to feel comfortable on our team. And I remember one year I was with Oakland back in 99, and Tony Phillips was because me and Tony Phillips came up, God bless his soul, he died last year, but
great player.
And a really good friend of mine. And he was one of those guys that wanted to continue to happen, you know, with the veteran guys, and, you know, the young guys couldn't say anything. And I was just the opposite. So we played on the same team, and we had different of opinion. So if you know, whenever Tony was around, the guys was around me. So I didn't mind that at all, because I felt like I wanted to make these guys feel at home. I wanted to make these guys feel like they was a part of the team. And without them, you know, we couldn't go. So we needed all 25 guys, and that was the type of player that I was.
Derek Jeter, to this day, says, and Derek Jeter played for a long time with a lot of good players, and he says, you're his favorite teammate of all time, and which is pretty interesting. And I think I'm going to guess that it has to do with that you come into that clubhouse, and it was a split team. You and Daryl Strawberry, which to this day, the coolest effing platoon I've ever heard. Tim Raines and Daryl, who invented that? Right. He's like 6'7", weighs like 140, but he just flips balls out of the stadium. It's just such a cool thing. Charlie Hayes, you had guys like that. And then you had Jeter, Posada, Bernie, Pettit, all those guys coming up. It was an amazing thing. And the way that I understand it secondhand was you were a veteran leader. But it wasn't, all right, we're going to do the kangaroo court. You're going to be fined $500 for this. It was, dudes, just relax and go out and play.
We have fun.
Yeah.
I mean, and that's the way I played the game. I played the game. If you ever saw me playing the game, if it was either, you know, rah-rah or laughing. I always had a big smile on my face. If it was in a tough game or if it was a blowout game, you would always see me with the same either smirk or smile on my face, because I enjoyed playing the game, and I wanted people to see me enjoying it. So when kids watch television, they see this guy that's one of the top players in the game having fun, I want kids to remember that. Remember that you can have fun, even though you're out here playing, and these guys are making millions and millions of dollars. I mean, I made some. I didn't make the kind of money they're making right now.
You literally were the biggest victim of collusion in the history of Major League Baseball. So I don't know. It could have been better.
You know what? It was what it was, but it didn't. I still didn't lose the passion of the game, regardless of, you know, what was going on behind the scenes. Again, you know, I try to tell people, it was like my playground. I mean, I enjoy playing. I enjoy playing in front of my fans. When they cheered me, I got pumped up. I mean, I love to hear it. And when I went on the road and they booed me, I kind of love hearing the boos too. So it really didn't matter. It was a playground regardless of wherever I was going.
You talked about having fun versus kind of the protocol, the traditions of the game. And honestly, I love baseball. But if I had to pick one thing that bothers me more than anything, it's dude hits a home run, takes 0.2 seconds too long to go around the bases, fastball in his ear the next time. What? If you dunk on somebody in basketball, you get the woof in his face. If you score a touchdown, you could do whatever. Why is baseball? Why is that such a stick up its butt, man? I don't get this. Are you? I mean, I'm gonna guess. I know the answer, but I mean, like, how far are you willing to go? Like, are you pro bat flip? Are you pro styling? Are you David Ortiz would take like 50 years ago on the base when he hits a home run? Is that cool with you? I mean,
I love it.
Hate David Ortiz.
I love it. Yeah? I mean, I love these guys being themselves. I mean, If you're a guy that's going to hit 30, 40, 50 home runs during the season, you should be able to do whatever you want. Okay? Because for me, when you have these guys that are striking people out all the time, they're doing their little thing out there, and no one says anything about
it. You play with Pascual Perez, my friend. The best.
I mean, you see the guys like, from a bow and arrow and all that stuff. I mean, that's okay. No one says anything about that. But you see a bat flip, then people want to fight. I just don't understand that. I don't get it. But I've always loved it. I mean, you know, me and Ricky kind of played in the same era, and we were different. I mean, Ricky was more hot doggish. I ran the bases. You know, I didn't try to show anyone up. That wasn't my style. But that's the way I played the game. Ricky had a little flash. That's the way he played the game. So I didn't have a problem with that at all. And I don't have a problem with the guys today. I mean, if you saw the baseball classic, you saw all kind of crazy stuff going on in the baseball classic. No one said anything about it. Now you get through a major league season, then you have guys that are a little pissed that a guy showed someone up. I don't think they're showing you up. What they're doing is showing how they feel about what they just did. Not what they just did against you. It's what they just did. And I love it.
And I wonder, that might be a cultural thing that might be on the verge of tipping anyway, because the game is getting more and more, there's a higher and higher percentage of Latin players. Which were the teams who were celebrating the most? Is PR, was DR, was Colombia? And I feel like it's going to change. You can't have this almost to the point, not a majority of the game, but just a huge percentage of the game, and they all just squelch the way that they play. And Yasiel Puig is an example of this, where he just does what he does. And Yasiel Puig is fantastic to watch. He's a lot of fun. So
exactly. So, I mean, that's the fun for me. That's the fun part of the game. And I think those people out there that don't want to see that, I think they're looking for the wrong things. I mean, I think baseball is something that you should have fun doing. And if it's flipping a bat, or if it, like, you know, with the chicken on the arm or whatever.
Oh, yeah. Oh, we miss Eddie. Yeah. It's too soon. Too soon. Yeah. We miss Eddie here.
You know, no one says anything about that, you know. So I mean, maybe now because he's not here. Yeah. But
So we know this for sure. Tim is cool with bat flip. And Tim is cool with the Ed Wing.
I'm cool with everything. Whatever you want to do, I'm cool with it.
You got it on record. Okay, so folks, this is your chance now. We are going to open it up. Jonah, thank you very much. Stay put. We're not getting rid of you yet. But we are going to get open the floor now for our Q&A. I'm going to ask for Bill from Bowmanville. If you can... Ah, Bill! All right, you want to just shoot your way to the back of the room there and I'll come find you?
There's a lot of people here. You just turn on the lights.
Wow. Yeah, that was intense.
That's cool.
It's like the part of the bar when it's like, you don't got to go home, but you got to get the
hell out of
here.
I thought we only had one session.
Oh.
No, you guys got the whole playoff.
I'm afraid now.
The Toronto Maple Leafs haven't made the playoffs in 97 years, and yet they're here. It's incredible.
Yeah. I'm going to go ahead and ask Scott's question. Tim, Scott would like to know, who was your favorite Expos manager and your favorite Expos teammate?
Well, teammate would be Andre Dawson. Manager, I would probably have to say Jim Fanning. I don't know if you guys know Jim Fanning. He passed away a couple of years ago, but I only had him for like a year and a half, but he was really the only manager that called me Timmy. So he used to always say, run, Timmy, run, run, Timmy, run. Got me going. I loved it.
After Fanning, by the way, the Expos had a manager named Bill Verdon. That was not your first choice.
Totally the opposite.
A very strict gentleman, military guy,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
Like what you would picture as like in a caricature in a movie kind of thing.
With big muscles, too.
Even as an old
he
guy.
He was older, too. Yeah. I mean, he's like walked around with his...
okay, and sorry, are you Chris or are you Bill? Bill from Bowmanville. All right.
I'm going to bring up Blue Monday.
Oh, no.
What are you doing?
Did you feel that? The excitement in the room just, like, literally hit the floor.
All right.
Tim, you're going to have to run, Timmy, run, and bring us back up. All right.
I know it was a great series, and my dad tells me stories. Anyways, I just wondered, it was a well-pitched game up until the point Rogers gave up the home run to Monday. Rogers was pitching an incredible game, ninth inning. What was the teammates' reaction to Rogers in the dressing room? And how did Rogers react himself?
Well, first of all, I don't think Steve had ever pitched in relief before. It was the first time, I think, in his career, other than maybe when he first started. But he was our ace. And we had lost our closer, which was Jeff Reardon. I think he had some back issues. And without him... You know, we put in our best pitcher because it was do or die.
He'd just beaten Steve Carlton twice. That would be like beating Kershaw twice in a series. Carlton is, you know, one of the probably 10, 15 best players ever. Rogers beat him straight up twice in the previous series.
Yeah, so I think it was just one of those situations where, you know, it was two outs, I think, when it happened. It was a 3-1 count or a 3-2 count. I'm not sure. And Steve being Steve, you know, just – tried to put the guy away with a fastball. And, you know, Monday isn't the guy that you feel like you have to pitch around. But it was just one of those swings. I mean, perfect pitch, perfect swing, fat part of the bat, and the ball went out of the ballpark. And I don't think anyone doubted Steve ever. I mean, to me, he's the best pitcher that I ever pitched in a Montreal uniform and would always be remembered as that for me. And still a really big friend of mine, works in the baseball, players.
Union, yeah.
Union. So, just tip your hat to Monday. You know, he got a good pitch and hit it out of the ballpark.
Do yourself a favor, by the way, one day, since I'm a stats guy, look up Steve Rogers' stats and look up Jack Morris' stats. I know Jack Morris has a lot of followers here. Jack Morris had a lot of advocacy for the Hall of Fame. Same career, same guy. And Rogers does not get the credit that Morris does. Phenomenal pitcher. Terrific.
Yes.
All right. We've got Chris. Chris, where are you from?
Stouffville.
Go ahead. Have your speech to the Hall of Famer.
Hey, Sam. I was wondering, of all the players you played with and against, if you had to make a dream team, what would it be or who would be on it by position?
Wow.
So, Doug Flynn at second for sure.
You put me on the spot here, man. Oh, okay. Let me try this. Gary Carter behind the plate. Frank Thomas at first base. Now, these are the guys I played with, right? Second base. Actually, it's with or against. Ooh. Oh, with or against.
Uh-oh.
Robbie Alomar, second base. Derek Jeter at shortstop. Wow, third base.
We're going to do Eli dirty here. I can't believe it. He was a pretty good ball player.
He's my favorite. He's my favorite teammate. Yeah. And wow.
I guess
I played with Wade Boggs, too, though. I mean, this guy's a Hall of Famer. I mean, wow. Tim Wallach at third.
Yeah, Wade Boggs is in here.
Since we got a bunch of Canadians in here, it has to be Tim Wallach. Left field will be myself. Center field will probably be Barry Bonds. I'm sorry to say that, but.
No, please.
This guy was probably the best player I ever seen. And Griffey, I guess you can kind of put both of those guys in the same, Ken Griffey Jr.
Andre Dawson does not make your team.
I'm sorry, no, man. I'm sorry. He's my best friend.
What are you
going
to do? Pinch hit, I guess.
As long as he's not. No, he's the DH.
DH. Save his knees, right? He needs
that's
it.
Right.
Poor
that's
guy.
Right. I remember playing center for him 1 year, so he needs the DH. And pitcher, wow. God, oh, left and right. Oh, Steve Rogers. And for me, the toughest guy was Steve Carlton. He was the toughest guy for me. I mean, I've saw them all, big unit. No problems with him. But Steve Rogers, oh, my God. I mean, Carlton, I couldn't touch the guy.
Two pitches, right? Just fastball slider,
yeah,
really.
I couldn't touch him. I don't know.
Boy, you're not alone.
He didn't throw hard enough. Maybe he had to throw 100 miles an hour for me to hit him.
Could be.
Maybe.
That was a good question.
Yeah, great question. They're really making you work.
They're putting me on the spot there, man. That's. I hope all my teammates don't see this.
We have some more questions if you're up for it.
Yeah, I'm up.
Tim, and I say this jokingly as I can, are you ever getting tired of Jonah?
Should ask that of my wife.
Never. He's like one of my best friends now. Seriously, we've
oh my God,
we don't see each other a lot, but it just seems like whenever we're around, it's like it was yesterday I saw him. You know, I mean, we've been together quite a bit the last two or
we
three.
We just end up talking about our twins, yeah. Really, most yeah. of the time. He has twins that are a year younger than mine, and they're the sweetest little girls ever. Yeah.
You know, I met this guy 4 years ago, and it seems like I've known him forever for some reason. So, yeah, I'm not going to badmouth him up here. I'm going to tell the truth. I'm going to tell you guys the truth.
But I would not be the starting center fielder on the
team.
No,
you will not.
No,
you.
Let's get that straight.
You would be the bat boy on that team.
At least you're in the mix, yeah, Jonah. At least you're in the mix. You get
job.
A jersey.
Yeah,
you get
I
a
get
helmet.
Him a job.
That's right.
All right. This is Rick from
Toronto.
Hey, Toronto. What's your question?
I'm sure you've heard it already a million times today, but again, congratulations on the induction.
Thank you.
And you're actually the reason that I haven't been to Cooperstown yet, because I always told everybody that I would never go until Tim Raines was inducted. So,
all right, you finally get to go. Yes.
You should all come. It's going to be amazing.
I'll actually be going with Expos Nation on the bus on
all
that
right.
trip.
All
so
right. I'm looking forward
I'm really
to
I'm really excited about it. I want to talk about your rookie season, and I know that you're more than just a stolen base guy, but that's what got me into watching baseball at the age of 7, was watching you steal all those bags in 1981. And you had 71 bags stolen in 88 games. Were you determined to steal as many bags as possible that year? Was 100 bags plus your goal? And I mean, you were on a pace on it. And if you had played a full season, did you potentially see breaking Lou Brock's record before Ricky Henderson did the following year? Was that what you were? You know, I know afterwards you said that you stole your bases more methodically and it wasn't just about stealing bags, but were you determined to break a record that season?
Not at all. I didn't even know what the record was, seriously. I just felt like in 81, I had to prove myself. I had to prove for myself as well as to the Expos and in baseball that I deserved to stay in the big leagues. I mean, I had 2 years previous where I didn't have a lot of time, but I didn't really prove myself. So I just felt like it wasn't just the stolen bases that I was looking for. It was igniting a team. And if it took stealing bases, you know, that's what got me going. But I didn't see it as, you know, a number. You know, if that season would have went on a full season, there's no telling how many I would have gotten. But I wasn't really thinking about it. You know, so when someone told me I stole 50 bases in the first 55 games, I was like, what? No idea that's what I was doing. But I was so locked in on trying to be a major league player. I was doing everything I could, not only to stay in the big leagues, but to be a part of a team that was a really good team. You know, Dawson and Carter and Valentine was there for a little bit.
Yeah, traded for Reardon. Great player. And a great man, by the way.
We had a great team. And I think just being a part of that, and at the time being the centerpiece, I didn't get all the credit, but I mean, I keep telling Dawson, I say, dude, if I didn't get on base and score all those runs for you, you would have never got into the Hall of Fame. So.
Humble, nice. I like that. Very humble. I like that. Thanks for boycotting, Rick. You did it.
I want to tell a very quick story. Yeah, this will be in the piece I wrote tomorrow, but when we were touring the Hall of Fame, you talked about your rookie season, and there was like a modern era part, which was like 1970 to present, so all was like, here's the cool old Astros uniform, this. And we came to a box of cornflakes with Fernando Valenzuela's face on it. And you're such a sweet man. You were not sweet. You started getting pissed off. You're like, that guy stole a Rookie of the Year award from me. He threw like 10 games. He played in L.A. I played in Montreal. I had a big disadvantage. It was great. Petty Tim Raines is my favorite Tim Raines. It was so good.
And that only happens once or twice a year.
Okay, we have another question here from Dave. He's from Markham.
Hi, Tim. I was going to ask you about the toughest pitcher. You answered that one already, so I thought, go to the catcher. Were there one or two catchers that were kind of like a Carlton, were really tough to steal on, that stood out above and beyond the others?
I had no respect for catchers. Okay, I take that back. The first guy that I ever had respect for was Pudge Rodriguez. And I remember I was an older guy, though, when he first came up, so I didn't really get, you know, to show him how really, you know, disrespectful I was to catchers. So he was a 19-year-old kid. I was playing with the White Sox, and his debut was against us. And I saw this kid come out of the chute and throw the ball down to second base quicker than I've ever seen any catcher do it. And he was just a 19-year-old kid at the time. And I was like, oh, my God. I'm a little slower. I'm older. So I have to take my chances. I took my chances against him. But I made sure when I took off that I knew I was going to make it. So he's the one guy that, out of all, that I had the most respect, which was very little.
Minimal respect.
Pretty cool that you're going to the Hall of Fame with
right,
Pudge, by the way.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Going.
Full circle. Is there any room if for modern day Tim Raines, if you were going to steal a base and show zero respect to a catcher who even dared tried to throw you out, what would be their celebration at second base? Is there any room for that? Is there any opportunity? You can't actually throw the bag like a bat flip or anything like that.
I never tried to show anyone up. You know, if I showed any kind of emotions, it wouldn't be to show a person up. It's to kind of get riled up my team. Not so much to kind of show anyone up. I remember one guy tried to show me up, Jody Davis. Name from the past. He was a rookie. Cubbies. He was a rookie playing with the Cubs, and I didn't know who he was. He's a catcher. He was a rookie coming up from the minor leagues, didn't know anything about him, and we were playing in Chicago, and I step up to the plate. I lead off the game, and he stands up. He's like about 6'4". I'm like, I'm
5'11 and a half. 6'3".
5'9".
Handsome.
And, you know, he's looking down at me and he goes, I bet you can't run on me.
Oh.
So, I'm losing my wallet. and I looked at him. Just, you know, lack of respect, you know, and I didn't never have respect for catchers anyway. So this guy goes, I said, so you that good? And this is the start of the game. I mean, we haven't even threw a pitch yet, and this guy's going. So I said, okay. Didn't say anything, you know, and got a base hit, got the first pitch, stole second.
Just despite him.
Just show him.
Yeah.
Second pitch, throw third. And the reason why I didn't steal home, because he wouldn't have to throw the ball. So
there was no point.
Right.
Exactly. So,
and when I crossed home plate, someone got a hit. Dawson or someone got a hit or something. I crossed home plate, and I stopped right on the plate. And I go, so do you want me to run anymore, or do you want to hold your arm back for the next game? He never said a word to me again about stealing bases.
That's awesome. All right, everybody. That is Tim Raines. That is Jonah Carey. Tim, congratulations.
Thank you.
It's about time. And Jonah, this is a relationship 4 years in the making, and I'm sure now the possibilities are just absolutely endless. So we look forward to more of your Tim Raines coverage.
Buddy Cop.
Forever linked.
2019 Buddy Cop movie, the new Lethal Weapon. Look for it. I'll be a little less racist than Mel Gibson, okay, though. So
just a little bit. I'll pay to see that movie.
Dream big, Jonah, dream big. All right, one more round of applause for Hall of Famer Tim Raines and his favorite reporter, Jonah Carey. Much.